Thank you so much, everyone. How are you doing, Steve? How are you, Sachin?
I'm good, thank you. Excited to be here.
Yeah, me too. Hi, Sachin. How are you? I think he's having
trouble. Good. Oh, there you go. I'm good, Melis. Hi, I'm good. Happy to be here.
Oh, happy to see you, Sachin. Where are you joining us from?
From Bodrum.
Oh my God, okay. How about you, Steve?
At the moment, I'm in the UK.
You're in the UK, okay, amazing. So I am Melis, founder of Wellbees. I'm also located in Istanbul, Turkey. And I would love to walk you guys through about what we're going to experience in the next 40 minutes, which is going to be a very high-paced, high-energy session of, believe it or not, no slides, and absolutely like a very fast-paced Q&A where you will get questions to like very like answers to very big questions. And hopefully we will also publish this as a very quick podcast for you guys as well. So today the topic will be financial well-being, financial employee well-being, so to say. And we're going to cover it from three different angles. So I'm expert in organizational well-being. I'm the founder of Wellbees. We do employee well-being. And then dear Steve here, hi, Steve. He is the founder of That Simple Saving, and he will be giving us a lot of insights on financial well-being programs and companies. And Sachin here, Sachin Bajaj, is that how you call your name? That's right. Okay, cool. He is also the founder of Comport. And from him, we'll be hearing a lot about compensation and how review of compensation works nowadays. Great. Let's get this party started, I would say. And for all of you who are here, who are joining us as attendees today, please feel free to drop any questions in the chat. And we'll be super happy to answer them. And also just bear in mind, this is a recorded session and this will be also posted as a podcast later on, just so you know. All right, Steve, let's start with you. So where do you think this whole thing is going? I mean, there are talks around a recession looming. We don't really know where the macroeconomy is going at the moment. There are a lot of like unknowns. We're certainly not really interested in the macroeconomy part here, but we're mostly interested in how that's going to affect our employees in the next quarter or two. So can you give us a little bit of direction there?
Sure. And as a reminder, none of us have a crystal ball. So I think HR people need to be prepared for inflation to go up, inflation to go down, interest rates to go up, to go down. But I think what we're likely to see is inflation is probably going to stay high. In the US, inflation is now being driven by services, which means higher wages, low unemployment. And that's probably going to have knock-on effects in the UAE as well. We're seeing a high cost of living, rent up 25% in the UAE, transport up 38%, food 8%. I don't think that's going to change anytime soon in the next year. Debt burden is going to continue to increase, especially anybody who's on a kind of fixed rate mortgage or personal loan. When those end, or anyone who's on a variable mortgage, they're going to get really squeezed there. And I think, remember, this is a tale of three economies. When you're dealing with your staff, they are exposed to the UAE economy and the US economy because the dirham is pegged to the dollar, but also their home economy as well. So I could easily see US interest rates up to 4.5% next year, which is pretty terrifying. EIBOR, the UAE rate, it's gone up from 1.2% up to 3.2% in the past year or so, and could go up, you know, well to 5 or 6%. So you're really starting to see people squeezed there. At the same time, possibly oil prices sagging, which is going to put pressure on the companies themselves.
And where do you think things are going to go, Sachin?
I think from, you know, I've lived in Dubai for about 10 years, and I think closely watched the economy going up and down since 2009 many times. To be very frank, I think Middle East is probably the least impacted area around the world in terms of when we say that there's inflation going up, you know. Even if you talk about the inflation, I think the cost of living is anyway very high, but on the other hand, the compensation is also benchmarked accordingly, and they are considerably high compared to some of the world's best economy. So from that standpoint, I think people who are already living there, it doesn't impact them much. I think it is the least impact you can say. If inflation goes from 2% to 3%, it seems like it's big, but in terms of percentage, it's so small that it doesn't hurt the pockets, you know, which are already used to the economy. Where it is going is, from the Financial Times standpoint, Dubai is a kind of place where people earn money and then they spend immediately, right? I think companies, what they're trying to do is helping employees to plan their, what we call a systematic investment planning process, right? That's where companies are putting a lot of focus, that they don't earn and then they spend all of it on luxuries of Dubai or Middle East for that matter, and keep saving for the future as well. I think that is the increasing focus for most of the organizations.
So I'm looking, of course, looking through the lens of an HR professional, coming back to you, Steve. Where do you think like HR is going to see more? You talked about a lot of squeezes. Where do you think they're going to see a lot of those squeezes happening in terms of the employees?
So firstly, UAE staff are some of the most stressed in the world. I think 88% was the last survey saying that they were extremely stressed. And remember, in the UAE, if you lose your job at the moment, you have to leave the country. And so that just loads more pressure onto you. What we're going to see, I think, is increased pressure from home countries. And so HR is going to need to understand the dynamics of what's going on. You know, for example, floods in Pakistan at the moment. So both economic and kind of unexpected crises. Individuals are going to have to spend more money, but they're also going to have to cut back on what makes them happy or what makes them what makes their life easier. So you can expect them to be more distracted and less focused and less motivated at work. They're also going to have less cash for resilience, and they're going to have trouble paying. So you need some emergency funds. As Sachin was saying, you know, like if you spend all your money just living in Dubai and then an unexpected bill comes along, whether your dad gets cancer or you didn't prepare for your DWA bill or whatever it might be, you're going to have trouble paying those large lump sums like rent. And therefore, you know, that's definitely somewhere where HR can step in to ease the burden on that. I think we're going to see even more people resorting to loans and credit cards just to survive on cash flow and turning to loan sharks or their family. That is like epidemic in the region already, and I think we're going to see it even more. But also where people have invested, they don't always invest that sensibly. And investments are really down at the moment across the board. And so, again, I think people are going to be really distracted there as well. So people are going to be worrying about their current finances. They're going to be worrying about their future finances. And they're going to be just even more distressed and distracted, unfortunately. And I think you'll see that from the lowest paid employees all the way up to the highest, especially if they're loaded up in debt. Doesn't matter how much you earn, you're going to have considerable stress around that.
Just curious, Steve, like, of course, like I'm asking this out of the blue because it's curious. I'm curious. So what are most of the emergency spending is happening in the UAE?
So the emergency spending tends to happen. If you're looking at like lower paid workers, it tends to be through remittances, so family crises, right. A parent gets sick and has no health insurance, or that there's problems at home. In the UAE, it just tends to be kind of either bad planning, or you haven't planned your rent properly and you've had your head in the sand, or it tends to be around credit cards and debt spirals that you simply you get these unexpectedly, you realize that you can't pay your card bills and then you get stuck. Or it may be simply that your car breaks down and you're faced with a big bill and you simply can't fix it.
Okay, so coming back to Sachin. So Sachin, you see a lot of huge companies, total reward programs, like you're seeing a lot of HR professionals redoing their compensation or like different level of compensation models. Where do you see financial well-being stepping in over the next couple of quarters? Like, where do you think HR is going to step in and take action? And how, what kind of form do you think that's going to have on total rewards or like compensation? Do you already see that happening? As you can see, I have a lot of questions, but you can, you know, start with the one that you like the most.
Thank you so much, Marit. No, so I think, see, total reward concept is always in the minds of HR professionals, competent professionals. They always talk about that the cash compensation is not the only one company should reflect, but as a full value proposition, they should talk about many other things companies are doing, right? So the increased focus on that part is what we see as a trend. So we when we talk about the compensation planning softwares to our clients, right? The first thing is they actually ask us that, okay, your tool can do compensation planning bit, but can it also reflect a kind of a wholesome benefits and allowances this company is paying, you know, on a regular basis so that employee can get a full view of that. That is increasing a lot, right? And it is not so much in the Middle Eastern country. Again, I would say, I think there's an increased focus in the Southeast Asian market, I'm sure in America and Europe as well. But Middle Eastern country, the limitation of restructuring the model of compensation doesn't have much of scope. You know, it's so limited. There are very standardized methods of doing compensation planning process. Increments, you know, when you talk about that I need to give an increment to employees, they are very standardized. When you talk about the stress level management or any benefits, they are very limited as well. They are, the market is not very experimental, just like Asia Pacific or probably American market is very experimental. I think they keep introducing new innovative awards and rewards around the well-being activities, basically staff welfare activities. I think Middle East is not so much that. Okay. On the other hand, a Middle Eastern countries also have a lot of MNCs. And hence the culture which is there is more driven by these MNCs. There's a huge lot of these pharmaceutical companies or manufacturing companies or you can say, you know, many other conglomerates which have set up their office for the Middle Eastern region, they keep bringing that practice. And if you take that as a standard norm, I think it's more moving towards that, you know, you can say that companies are trying to give a support for the work-life balance. That's one of the most important one. There is a very common trend across the world that people say that, oh, I, you know what, working from home means that I don't have timeline. I'm started working very early in the morning and working very late in the evening. You know, I need balance. So companies are putting a bit of pressure on the management as well as the managers who are leading the teams not to interfere in the personal time of the employees. And that there has been proactive feedbacks, surveys which are being rolled out in the companies asking. I have heard about Schneider. Schneider is very, very proactive. They're collecting huge amount of data on a very regular basis from every employee and every manager that what exactly are they doing in terms of managing this work-life balance so that people don't feel more stressed about working from home. I think that was the trend which was seen about at least a year back. Now it's kind of normalizing because of these practices, but I think that is a very strong intent, a strong trend which is prevailing in the market. So companies are putting more focus on that.
Okay, coming back to Steve now. So Steve, we talked a little bit about total rewards at the moment, but I really want to find out what's companies in the UAE are doing in terms of helping employees with their financial well-being. What are you seeing out there, Steve?
So I think there's three things that can really make a difference, and they don't cost that much, right? So the first thing is I think you should be acknowledging the challenges faced by staff around financial wellness. And unfortunately, what we do see in the UAE is a reluctance to talk about this. And it's starting to change now. The idea that personal finance is personal and it's a taboo topic in the office and you basically get fired if you admit that you have some kind of debt issue, I think that's being forced to change. And companies have realized—
Do you think that's going to change?
I think it has to change because I think it's starting to change. But unlike other countries, because you know, most people aren't born and raised in the UAE, you can always feel like you can just get kind of tipped out of the country very easily. Mm-hmm. But I think companies are starting to suffer from increased turnover. Mm-hmm. And therefore, they need to do something about staff retention. So I think acknowledging that goes a long way. I think paying on time also goes a very long way as well. And there are some horrific stats. Like I think 60% of people in the UAE are concerned now that they're not being paid on time.
Oh, wow. Why is that happening? Like, do you have any other stats? Like, is that just a belief or fear? Or
it comes down from the top. It comes down from the top. So what happens is that governments in this region don't pay their suppliers on time, and therefore the companies don't pay their suppliers on time, and they also don't pay their staff on time if they're having cash flow problems. But of course, this massively increases stress. And I think as HR professionals, you're duty bound to try to understand from finance and from top management whether there are going to be any problems, and and to see how you can mitigate them. And I think that the third aspect here is that for financial well-being, you need to get top-level support. And what I recommend for any HR professional is just go and lock yourself in a room and come up with a financial well-being policy, and just think about all aspects of HR and your company through the lens of financial well-being. Mm-hmm. And I think just that in that 1 hour, you will make tremendous strides. I think you know, what in terms of what you need to do very quickly at a high level, you know, if you have a financial wellness policy and a program, ideally backed with a budget, you'll be head and shoulders above most other companies. And I know that staff, for example, have said 50% of staff have moved in the past 2 years in the UAE. That's quite an astonishing statistic. Yeah, literally 50% of staff have moved in the past 2 years who were interviewed. There was a Cigna survey about this. And also the same number are thinking of moving again. And we see that at least 70% would like companies to have a financial wellness policy if they did move.
I have to ask you this to understand it, to make sure that I understood correctly. So 50% of everyone surveyed in the Cigna survey said that they're moving within the country, or they're moving from somewhere else
likely within the country. Now, I haven't looked into the details of who exactly, whether they interviewed a representative section across the board. But if we assume it's kind of like white collar middle management, then that it is pretty shocking. So I think if you're going to do this properly, you should try and assess what you're doing at the moment and understand the range and size of the problems that are faced by your staff to establish a kind of baseline. And this being the UAE, you need to do that across nationalities, across pay grades, and also across ages, like life stages, anonymous surveys, things like that. Then I think you need to identify the current initiatives that are actually being undertaken, any quick wins you can achieve, and any areas that where there's clear gaps that require support. Because here you're going to be building your business case, which is like, what are the gaps? What do we need to fill? What can we do? What's working? What's not working? How much is this going to cost? And what are the benefits? And I think in identifying those initiatives, I see maybe five areas. Firstly is cash flow support. So advances, cheaper loans, discounts, things like that. Support sources like debt counseling, training for line managers, which is like completely non-existent as far as I can see. And then, the more standard education, posters, guides, videos, apps, that sort of thing. Leaning on providers. I don't think enough companies do this. Lean on your bank. Lean on your insurer. Lean on, the grocery stores to give discounts, exchange houses, all of these things. You have some leverage there. And then finally, in the area of benefits, like really understanding, do you have enough? Are they proper safety nets? Think of what people think about what people are actually facing, and then communicate the benefits of solving the challenges. I think what we're seeing is that, you know, people say, here's a guide to life insurance, or let's have a town hall about how your life insurance is changing. No one's going to come to that. Whereas if you start with what would happen to your family if you died, you've immediately got people's attention. So it's those changes, maybe quite, not quite as negative as that, but like those changes in communication, I think make a massive difference.
Tiny bit, yeah.
Yeah.
This is so amazing. Hold on. Let me summarize everything that I've heard. So basically you started like this, these past 5 minutes with saying almost something like what used to be taboo was, right, like mental well-being. We didn't used to talk about mental well-being at work. And now like that's sort of shifting, right? Like everybody's sort of talking about mental well-being, but that's replaced with financial well-being. So that's, it's sort of like, I'm sort of hearing this, like this is the next level of door that we're opening at the moment. And then what I'm hearing also is that you said like, listen to your employees, like when you lock yourself up in that 1 hour to that room to understand like with the strategy that you're going to come up with, understand who you're dealing with. And it totally brings me back. I'm sure like Sachin is really going to enjoy this little example here too, but we have this incredible client of ours. Her name is Emma Davis. She's from Masafi. So she actually did that, Steve. Like she literally sat down with some of her team and she was like, okay, tell me what's like, what would help you the most in terms of financial well-being that I could, like, that's within my hands. And here's what they said. Like it's their workforce is mostly of Indian origin. And they said like, our number one concern is to send home money. Because it was COVID, it was difficult to go to banks and the banks were charging a lot of commission to send money to India. Here's what she did. It was so simple. And I love this example. Like she went back to one of the banks, as you said, like with one of your examples, I love that. She went back to one of the vendors and was like, you know, like I've been investing into you guys, now invest back to my employees. And she really commissioned down that, she like really, bargained down that commission that the bank charges for money transfers. And then she managed to get a bank teller to the company every paycheck day. Amazing, right? Like she says like engagement went up, morale went up, like turnover went down, one small single step. And like, this is not even strategy. I mean, it's a small intervention, but it helped so much. And you also said the third thing you talked about was the layers of employee financial well-being, right? Like you talked about first an awareness level, you know, brochures and like maybe a couple of content, webinars, maybe trainings, right? Like that's the awareness piece. We call that the change funnel, Steve. So on top of the funnel, you have the awareness piece for people like who don't have the awareness or readiness to change. And once people are more aware down the funnel and not yet ready to change, for them you have maybe like a little bit of gamified stuff like benefits, bonuses, like in between, sandwich in between, so that they can take action. And then finally, you have the real deal, right? Like debt counseling, maybe someone like Steve who comes in and like consults people in like in terms of taking charge of their own finances, or like line manager trainings, right? Like down the funnel, you really are doing those like life-changing interventions, but on the top, you're doing the more like awareness building stuff. Okay, did I summarize that?
Very nicely.
Thank you. Coming back to you, Sachin. So at the end, Steve talked a little bit about the benefits, right? Are there any like financial well-being related benefits that people are crazy about at the moment that you're seeing?
I think medical policies are usually are something which is of concern. I think reason being it's very expensive there. Mm-hmm. So most of the companies do focus on that and they keep improving them. What I heard from a couple of companies like Etisalat, Dew, Property Finder, and some other bigger groups like Imar, for example, Emirates Airlines, what they're doing is they're asking the insurance companies to come and have more awareness sessions about the medical policy. I think if you talk about, in my own experience, whenever we rolled out a medical policy, I think there's a very less amount of usage of the medical. Most of the medical policies do provide like executive health checkup, right? Mental health checkup probably, or physiotherapy kind of sessions and so on, or maybe some awareness sessions which are happening. People don't attend. People didn't used to attend. People said. Now companies are actually enforcing, and Ethis Lab kind of company, which is actually a semi-government organization, and said, but it's a huge one, about 10,000 people. What they do, they actually make the session mandatory for every employee. Okay. They shut down the business and they say, guys, for this 1 hour, you're only attending the webinar about the wellness and well-being. And you're not allowed to do the work, right? On Friday, they are enforcing. So Friday, you know that earlier that off days were Friday and Saturday. Now right. The Middle Eastern countries have moved to Saturday and Sunday, right. The global kind of work environment. However, still, most of the companies like Ethis Lab, they are enforcing that the Friday should be work from home. So they are not allowing, unless there's a very much emergency required for a particular staff and a team, they don't allow people to work from home. Mm-hmm. Ethis Lab kind of organization or IMAR kind of organization also has some practices that they actually shut down the power at the end of the day. So if it is 6 p.m. office timing, they shut down the power for about 15 minutes, 20 minutes, so that people just leave the office immediately after their day is over.
Okay.
Yeah. These are some unheard of practices outside the Middle Eastern country, but these happen actually. So they are, you can call them non-socialistic kind of activities.
Approach.
They do happen actually. Absolutely. Other thing which I heard is, the medical doctor on demand. So the phone advices basically are becoming very common. Most of the companies are doing it. And Melissen, you have to understand that in Middle Eastern countries, and we'll go a little beyond UAE and, go to countries like Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Oman, Bahrain. You know, if you collectively look at, a best practice is what being probably exercised by less than 10% organization. Okay. It is not a market where a practice become viral and 80%, 50%, 70% of the organizations are following the same practice. It doesn't happen in Middle Eastern countries. When you do surveys, for example, it's a very small representation of the outcome which you're going to get. Right? It's very common. Because one thing is government protects the data sharing, right? If it is government-driven approach, that government is, for example, tracking for the customers, they're tracking something what we call happiness index, right? If they drive it very effectively. There's enough promotion and so on. But otherwise, organizations are not allowed to share these best practices, the data which is floating around that at mass. So hence, and social media, for example, is not so much prevalent as it is prevalent in Asian Pacific environment or American or European environment. So it has to be limited. Steve also mentioned about the survey outcome. For example, 50% people are saying they're moving. I think that is the resultant of in few months of time when the COVID has a peak at the Middle East, in the Middle Eastern countries, 30% of population was let go. Now people who had the resistance to survive for a few more quarters, they survived and now they're changing the job. And that's what the outcome is coming from, most likely, right? And then when it moves back, Middle Eastern country also has a sharp peak and a sharp downturn and a sharp peak again. So when they actually fire people, 30% population, in the next 6 months when the situation become normal, they immediately hire 30% people as well, or even more than that.
Oh.
So it bounces back much faster compared to the other world economies because it's small and manageable. And that's one of the reasons probably they are able to manage it faster.
Okay, you mentioned a couple of very interesting things. So you mentioned the trend in like the medical policies, the medical doctrine on demand. Like I've seen this in so many different reports around the world as well, not just the UAE. I mean, there's a report from Benefex called the new benefit manager is called. It was released last year and it talked about like the extreme comeback of these like very simple benefits, right? Like, I mean, who gives a damn? Like, who gave a damn about insurance, right? And now, like, it's popular again and it's on top of the agenda. So, merit as well. Like, merit is huge in benefits and, like, they're also, like, they have their own report as well. There they talk about how experiences are coming back to these like total reward pictures like never before. I guess like it's because of this mix of us facing COVID and like experiencing death maybe so close by, and then reverting to non-monetary experiences. Maybe that could be explained that way. And then you also talked about maybe shedded some light on the move rates that Steve talked about, how like 50% of the people are moving in UAE and how that could be associated with the 30% layoff rates that happened within this year again. Okay, so coming back very quickly, like I would love to know from you, Sachin, if you're seeing any interesting trends in the compensation world. I know you guys are looking at some crazy statistics at how like we used to look at compensation every year, and now it's like at shorter intervals. Why do you think that's happening?
Melis, we can give you probably insight about a non-Middle Eastern country more than the Middle Eastern country. Which is the retention bonuses, right? That's one of the highest, peak, at a highest peak right now. I've heard almost about most of the clients who actually come and try to do an automation of the product, for example, automation of the processes and so on. They always talk about the retention bonuses. They say, can you manage my retention bonuses on your solution?
Okay. Right?
And it's not actually... you can say half of it is attributed towards these high attrition rate all over the world. You know that it's called the a great attrition everywhere. The new terminology has been thrown by somebody.
Great awakening, wherever you look at it from.
Absolutely. So one is contributed to that. But other, I think when you look at controlling your workforce for a longer period, I think retention bonuses, which are either given upfront, but spread across with a clawback over a period of 2 to 3 years, or given as a commitment and spread across 2 to 3 years. These are the two common ways of giving retention bonuses. And earlier, it used to be only very specific to the high-level individual, like a CXO level or probably one level lower, when you are hiring a talent in the immediate basis and the talent is crunched in the market, right? Now, it is happening for the existing employees. So companies are proactively looking at these plans and trying to roll out. It can be cash, it can be stock option, and then rolling out multiple schemes at the same time. I know one company, which is back in Southeast Asia. They have people in Middle East and countries, Europe and America, everywhere. Mm-hmm. They've rolled out a global plan, which actually reviewed 4 times in a year. So every quarter, they identified the critical resources and the critical position holder, and then give them additional grant of retention. 4 times in a year.
That's quite crazy. That means a lot of staying in the room for hours, as Steve said, and locking yourself up and thinking a lot about things.
Absolutely, absolutely. But again, I think the practices are very, very minuscule in nature. They are not like, they're spreading like fire in every organization around the world, or even Middle East or Asian countries and so on. It is still slow, I would say.
I agree. Okay, Steve, coming back to you, I really want to know, we have the last 5 minutes, but I really want to know from you a couple of benchmarks from your own practice. So what are some of the things you're seeing? So we obviously heard from the compensation side and benefits. So what are you seeing in more of the, I would say, training programs in terms of making financial well-being a reality? Like we talked about the strategy piece with you just earlier. How do you make it into a program?
Yeah, so here's a couple of examples of companies that have done this. And I think what the astonishing statistics is that if you have a financial wellness policy, then 2.5 times more staff are satisfied with their benefits package. You don't necessarily have to even change the benefits package. You just have to communicate why it's useful. Wow. But probably in the creation of that financial wellness well-being policy, you probably will tweak things. I think the problem is that if you're paying people money and offering these benefits, it's a cost to you. But if you're just throwing it into a black hole, then it's not going to achieve anything. And that's why you get these astonishing benefits. And three times more people are saying that it supports them at different stages. And a lot of this stuff, actually, it doesn't cost the company anything to do. So for example, in the UAE, there's a small window manufacturing company that I think is best in class when it comes to financial well-being for small companies. A lot of staff were never coming back from vacation because they're being caught out by loan sharks, you know, a 20,000 dirham loan becoming a 90,000 dirham loan, and travel bans and threatening families, all sorts of nasty stuff. So what they did is, firstly, they warned staff and they educated them about the dangers of debt. Secondly, they didn't give out salary certificates at all without, unless giving checking the purpose for these things. They were quite flexible about salary advances if there was a genuine crisis at home. They would actually, I'm definitely seeing companies paying upfront for rent and then getting the money back through through the salary. And therefore, that's effectively an interest-free loan. It makes a massive difference. Regular talks on money, empowering debt champions to help others with money. I think the idea of the champion is very interesting. If you're too scared to go to HR or your boss, you may be more happy to talk to an employee who has nothing to do with your line, who just loves helping people with debt or personal finance. And we're also seeing personal finance clubs being set up by employees. It just takes the load off HR. You can build relationships with legal firms that help specific country nationalities with the debt. And you can direct them to external resources. So, for example, you know, like the Simplify Facebook group, 25,000 members, amazing source of financial knowledge. Millionaire Expat, an amazing book, you know, costs 50 dirhams. What this company found is that absconding went down to zero. Staff turnover, apart from terminations, went down to zero while they've doubled in size over 4 years. 50% drop in staff with debt crises, and 60% of staff like starting to save and invest for their future. So like huge changes, and really the total cost of that, apart from the salary advances perhaps, is almost zero. We're seeing with some larger companies, you know, hiring external providers to create wellness, financial well-being programs, distinct from an overall well-being program. And I think finances can get drowned out by yoga and nutrition. But like, why are people eating too much ice cream? It's because they're stressed about money, right? So go to the heart of these things. Segmenting their data by age, nationality, earnings. Advances for newcomers, you know, like for rent and furniture, emergency savings accounts. That's an interesting one, where you put aside 5% of the employee's salary, almost like forcing them to save and perhaps even matching towards that. Cheaper loans, I think leaning on the bank to say, like, you know, instead of giving our staff a 9% loan and a 40% credit card, we want interest rates that are significantly lower. Will make that makes an enormous difference. And then giving access to coaching, on-demand guides, and I think workshops focusing on the soft skills. You know, like, it's no point in giving someone a lecture about budgeting or interest rates or things like that. If you need to teach them about how to plan, how to have good judgment around money, how to have the right attitude about money, how to think about their future. These things have been found to be much more effective than just a boring old free talk from the bank about, you know, setting up a current account or whatever. The best companies I've seen, certainly in the UAE, have triggers that send this information out. So if you get a bonus or you get promoted to management, or you have maternity leave, or you are you reach a certain age, you get sent training about retirement or about life insurance and things like this. So it links all of these benefits and all of this education to the person's life cycle. And again, it's not that difficult to create this. And I think one of the most powerful things is to have, you know, a financial wellness month, a financial wellness calendar, a message from the CEO saying, this is important. I too once had made a mistake with my credit card and I did XYZ and I'm never doing it again. Things like that, that it really shows that you as a company, you care. And the benefits are going to be, you know, the staff have more confidence in you. They understand why the benefits exist and they're more likely to use them. And they're more motivated at work and less likely to have financial crises. It's really for not very much money at all. And it's just a little bit of upfront thought. The benefits are huge.
Amazing. So you mentioned the book's name was The Millionaire Expat.
Yes, by Andrew Hallam.
Can you drop that in the chat? That would be great. So that was incredible because this is also how we approach well-being at WellBees. It's super holistic. We also cater to the financial well-being side. And when we look at it, Steve, we also never look at it only from an awareness and like challenges part, but it's a social thing, right? Like you can't, I'm sure you know this as well from your Tiny Habits training, that like behaviors unfortunately don't change on their own. You need to work with other people. It's a social thing. Behavior change is very social. And once you get other people on board with other interventions, that's when sustainable behavior change happens. So the examples you mentioned here really resonate with me in terms of like having debt champions, having like personal finance groups, not HR, not just being the only person or only department looking after this, but also the CEO coming up and being super vulnerable about this and, you know, sharing examples about it. Sharing, you know, resources, but not just like resource, but like literal calendars, doing it super personal, not just like, hey, here's for everybody, but like making sure that emails are super timely, like make sure to like send those emails out maybe 2 days after the paycheck hits the bank, right? Like I find that all super timely, amazing. So I want to wrap it up here. We covered financial well-being. I think super sweetly, super short, to the point, in 40 minutes, we started two minutes after four. So we're right on time. I just want to see if there are any questions from the audience. If not, I'm going to wrap this up and thank my dear Sachin and Steve.
Before you ask the question, I'd like to add probably one closing comment. I think organizations have to understand that while we talk everything about the existing employees, the moment these things become practice, right, they become attraction for the talent as well, right? Companies who want to attract and articulate all these benefits, all these practices into an offer letter, imagine how powerful that can be. And some companies are doing it very, very effectively, like Schneider, for example, I talked about.
I totally agree. I'm sure Steve has seen some of those. Steve, have you seen any examples where they have used this for employee branding?
Certainly in terms of recruitment, it's definitely powerful to say, like, we actually look after our staff and, you know, here's how the benefits package will actually help you, as opposed to in a very dry way, here's the benefits package. So yeah, there's all sorts of things you can do around communication that completely transform. And it sends a signal, like, we're not just going to use you and then dump you, right? Which is what every employee in the UAE is worried about. You know, we actually value you as an employee.
So there's a very timely question because we also surveyed HR professionals about this, and I think this is a great question because of this. So Sanam asks, what about the well-being of the companies? I believe across geographies, companies, specifically in certain industries, are also suffering from financial well-being themselves. So it's getting harder to fulfill the needs of the employees. What are they going to do? Super timely. Who wants to take a stab at it?
I mean, in a way, this is about strategy, right? And this moves the issue away from HR up to the CFO, CEO levels, the board levels. If you are running a business with too much fat and it's not generating any money, then you are going to have to right size your company across the board, right? It's not fair to be employing people if you can't look after them. And so yeah, I think that we are going to see I mean, amazingly, the tech industry, for example, in 2020, 2021, the past 5-10 years, tech could do no wrong and was just booming, booming, booming. And now we're starting to see Tim Cook and, you know, like all of these, like Google and Apple and all of these companies starting to say, like, you need to be productive, otherwise we're going to have to lay people off. And so I think all companies and most industries are suffering at the moment. And I think the challenge of the CEO is to make sure that the companies do well without just putting the pressure on the employees. It's very easy to say, right, we'll just chop staff, chop benefits, chop everything. Well, they're going to find that there's nothing left, especially when employees are increasingly empowered and prepared to move. You know, in COVID, once you've moved, it's very easy. You learn how to move again, right? So COVID has taught everybody how and why they want to move company. And so that's what's going to happen.
And just to add on Steve's comment, I think if you look at the benchmarking data of any company for that matter, and compare, you know, when they compare the employees are always getting paid lesser than the market. So they always have a gap to catch up with, right? And if you look at that employee when they're leaving, right, because of XYZ reason, because of cost cutting measure, which CEO is going to take to manage the business, it is ultimately going to hurt the business back. Because when you go and replace a new employee, you always hire at the market price. So when you're anyway going to pay it, why not correct those particular employees who are already working, loyal to you, and they have been surviving with you, can actually add more productivity if you treat them well. I think if CEO can ask that question first before taking any measure of cost cutting unnecessarily, they will get the right answer straight away.
So this is, I think, and I'll come in for full circle here. I think both of you actually talked around this a lot in the past 40 minutes, because Steve said, like, only putting your financial well-being policy out there, even just doing that, right? Like, just, this is our policy, right? Like, these are our payment dates. Here's how we approach, I don't know, debt. Like, just simply by writing that out, you're actually, without, say, by the way, spending any extra money on anything by putting that out, people are going to be 2.5 times happier and more satisfied. And you don't have to have, like, you don't have to spend millions on this to make this visible, transparent, something to be talked about. So that's what I took from Steve's talk. And from Sachin, I understand that, like, with benefits, like, because, like, for example, in this part of the world, especially, like, when there's high inflation, there is a certain expectation of employees, especially key employees, for you to, like, take, you know, change the compensation model to pay them well, to pay them more than the market, right? To, you know, close that gap. And you can't always do that, right? Because of Sanam's point, like, the business themselves, they're also taking a toll because of the whole economic situation. And when you can't be doing that, like, when you can't actually look at compensation, you can actually look at benefits and look at ways to diversify that. So that's my step at looking at that. So I really want to thank everyone for participating. Thank you so much, Steve. Thank you so much, Sachin. This was such a rich session and with a lot of examples. Until next time, I want to bid farewell to everyone who attended today and see you at the podcast and its responses there. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Sachin.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Melis. Thank you, Steve.
Bye, guys.
Bye.